CastleRockRadio.com. The future of radio.
Today's program is sponsored by TheIndieFest.com, a virtual festival and showcase for cinematic gems and unique voices.
It's the Roaring Success Radio Hour. One full hour of information, news, and commentary on the performing arts around the world and on your heart.
You got mail, baby, yeah.
Hey, we have our guest online, I understand.
Good. Let's bring Mark on and start talking a little bit about his production entitled Prince of Swine. Good morning, Mark Toma. Thank you for carving out your schedule and coming on the Roaring Success Radio Hour.
How are you?
Very, very well. Yeah, you are an award winner with TheIndieFest.com. Dr. Thomas Baker quotes, although in the comedy genre, Prince of Swine boldly offers a controversial and politically incorrect statement about the relationship between men and women, and it puts feminism on trial. It excels at storytelling and is filled with likable and not so likable characters. Now, I think that's a pretty intriguing little introduction to this film that you have created.
Hopefully. Yeah, Tom really liked the film. I think he was the backer behind it that got it into the Indie Fest.
So, that's great.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good accurate description of the film.
And when you're asked what it's about, you say, it's about 100 minutes. Funny, that's what most of my students get as a reply when they ask me about what movies are about. Yeah, it's about 120 minutes, you know. I don't know. Watch it. Yeah.
Well, I don't really think like that. They want you to think like that when you're sort of pitching the movies. you can't say it's about nothing or something, or just you can't say it's about everything either.
That's right. Both of those pitches have already been used.
Yeah.
Next. Yeah.
So they want the buyers and the network executives and everybody that'll screen the film wants you to put it in they want something they can depend on and describe.
That's
and things
right.
like that. And that's just
when you do pitch your film, what is your short pitch, your high concept, if you will?
Show this film and you'll make, you know, tons of money and you'll be famous.
Spoken like an arts entertainment lawyer if I ever heard one.
That's what they, if you can say that without, you know, being crass, God forbid.
Hey, at least you brought money up. We've talked to guests on our show who forget all about the money part of it.
They do tend to forget the money part as filmmakers. And I think as a whole, all of us filmmakers do, in a way, have to forget about the money and focus on our passion and get the story made. We are speaking with Mr. Mark Toma, the actor, writer, and director of Prince of Swine. And Mark, we're going to have to take just a few moments to make a little money for the show. We thank all of our sponsors for keeping us on the radio, on the air, if you will, on this internet station. And we will be right back with actor, writer, director Mark Toma after these short messages. Mark Toma, actor, writer, director of Prince of Swine, a 17-year film in the making. For those of you that are listening in to our show today, filmmakers, writers, producers, directors, and actors yourself, those of you who are more than 400,000 in number, we greatly appreciate your ears. And if you wish to contact us or contact the filmmaker, Mr. Toma, whom we are speaking with today, be sure and chat your request or comments in, and Wild Bill Green over here will be feeding back to you on the chat line. Our phone line is 888-321-RADIO, and we're back with Mark. Mark, you started at the University of Chicago. Certainly after that, production company kind of fell apart with Second City and so forth like that, and was reconstructed because of your efforts alone. I'm sure that's true.
Oh, my God. If anyone from the University of Chicago is listening right now, they probably would have killed me.
That was purely out of my mind for all of you U of C listeners out there. This is just the crazy man on the radio talking of his own free will. And for any legal contributions, we always take those too. So anyway. But you worked with improv, and
there was a group of students in the Chicago in the '80s who got the theater movement going back there, and I was part of that group or one of that group, but it was fairly large group.
Nice,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you became a lawyer, passing the exams with flying colors because you simply didn't care about being a lawyer, but using it as a research mechanism. I think that's incredibly wise.
Well.
or at least unique. You know, right?
Let's go for unique. Yeah.
Wow.
I passed the New York bar. Yeah, I did. I wouldn't describe myself as a lawyer now. I mean, I passed the New York bar, and I practiced law for a very short period of time, mainly to pay back what I owed for law school.
There you go.
But
right.
Yeah. No, that was I was the craziest lawyer you would ever want to meet. I would not have hired me as a lawyer.
Yeah, I can imagine you cross-examining your witnesses. Okay, let's improv just a little bit, shall we? All right. Now,
that does not go over big either in court or in a law firm.
Yeah, I can see Judge Scalia up there. Now, young man.
Yeah.
That would not go
they
well.
They do not want some creative force of chaos. You know?
But, of course, I'm sure that helps to this day in contracting and all of the information that goes on behind the scenes. Let's talk a little bit about that, how you contracted your actors and your crew. I assume you got most of your crew from the University of Southern Cal as either graduates or interns to help produce this film, Prince of Swine. Let's talk a little bit about how you acquired those people.
Well, we had, we advertised in the trades where we had a lot of USC graduates working for them. I didn't go directly to the school or anything.
Okay.
No, Mandy.com is the service I used for crew at the time. I don't know if, I think that's still the most popular for crew.
Right.
You can, place an online ad for Craigslist and you'll be deluged great crew as you need. That's why the film business is based in L.A. You can just get fabulous talent. It's always there, and they're always hungry.
You bet.
And on every level of filmmaking, I hear that's branching out to other cities now. I haven't produced anywhere except L.A. yet.
Right.
But that's definitely how to go about it.
We do have a very active community here, and those are certainly two sites that do feed the community. And, of course, for those of us that make our living that way, it does challenge a little bit when you're trying to acquire the same crew and allow them pay, and somebody else is not wanting to pay and are using their time. So that's becoming an interesting little conundrum. And I'm sure that's true out there in LA as well.
That would be tough. I mean, the crew is, you need the crew to be consistent. You need them to be loyal to you.
That's right.
If you're not paying for them, that's one big pillar of your production that could leave.
Most definitely. Yeah. Let's see. Should I stay with Mark for $50 a day or, go over here to one of the major studios for several hundred dollars?
I paid them a little more than that.
Yeah. I would hope so.
It was a little higher wage.
That's right.
That.
Yeah. How did you end up raising the finances for your film? A lot of individuals take private donations. Other individuals do profit sharing. What sort of construction did you build to raise the money to do your film?
Well, I've been in Hollywood for a while, and a lot of people who would be really expensive components of a film owed me favors. So
nice.
I got the I mean, I'd done work for them, and I said, just pay me back with your own work when I make my film.
Great.
The big chunk of it I got with, there's a reason everybody keeps film finance, you know, secret.
Absolutely. That's right. Yeah, we're not asking you to reveal any secrets.
It's usually such a, there's such a long, like, it's just a long line of spit and tissue paper keeping the finances of a film together just to get it across the finish line. Just deals within deals within deals. It's amazing how the whole thing stays together. But the bulk of it, I had an investor who allowed me to take the movie as a tax write-off for him. So we weren't really risking a huge amount of money. If it lost everything, then he would be able to take it as a tax write-off, which is a pretty common form of structuring the finance.
That's exactly right. Yep. Yeah. And do you find that from your experience, however long or limited it may be, do you find that simply grows with the market the way it is today? It seems like every time we're in a recession or the majority of the country is having financial difficulties, that's when the people with money say, well, now is the time to risk, because the return can be so much greater than the risk that normally is available. Do you find that to be true?
I haven't really had to raise money so far since the crash, or whatever we're calling it, the Great Recession.
right, whatever it is.
It is odd that, there's some, you know, evidence that in hard times the movie business booms a little bit.
Right.
That happened in the Great Depression.
That's right.
It's supposedly happening a little bit now. It's difficult during all times to raise money for films. I mean, it's the most difficult business in the country.
Right.
But it still seems to be happening. I mean, it's just got back from the AFM yesterday, and the year 2008 when the financing went out of everything, AFM was a funeral. I mean,
wow.
There was just, the bankers were not putting up any money, so there were no buyers. There was just nothing to make the whole thing go. It picked up somewhat last year, from what I understand, and it was going at a pretty good clip this time. So that's, you know, it's light years better than it was 2 years ago.
Good.
That would be foreign buyers for American films, so I don't, that's the measure of things you get down there. But it was certainly had perked up over what it was 2 years ago. That's the best barometer I have of it right now.
What genre of films did you find at AFM being the most popular this year?
This is a very informal survey. This is just me walking the nine floors of the AFM.
Right.
Horror seems to be doing. There seems to be. I would roughly break it down as maybe it seemed to be at least half, you know, some genre of horror.
Right.
Action is always big in international markets. And
sure.
Then there's, I don't know, maybe 10% art house and maybe 10% documentary, something
right.
like that. But the bulk of it, it seemed to have shifted more towards horror above action. Usually action is the biggest staple of international
right.
markets, because it's the easiest to understand across cultures.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the horror seemed to be making a big surge down there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not that your film is horror by any long shot. More along the lines of comedy. But it, I've heard that it horrifies some of its viewers. Because I think anytime you dive into sexual or political content that takes one form of vision away from another, per se, art will stimulate thought, won't it? And I think
stimulate hate.
Yeah. And that's okay. If you're not getting people's reactions, I guess your art form isn't that successful. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about that, but we're going to take another break here and keep our show on the air with our wonderful sponsors. Thank you, Mark. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Lily Tomlin, and thank you for listening to the Roaring Success Radio Hour with your host, Paul Neil Rohrer, and Wild Bill Green.
Castle Rock Radio, the future of radio.
Is a metaphor for the corruption on Wall Street right now. And as Prince of Swine is a metaphor for the country as a whole, we're on the brink of revolutionary change economically, militarily, every which way. What a wonderful quote for your film.
Yeah, I was in a grandiose mood.
Wow. That's terrific. Man, you were just spouting all kinds of stuff there, huh?
Wow. It was an election. Like I was up on my soapbox.
Yeah, that's nice. That's intellectual ranting and raving. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. How
they
fun.
Wanted me to give, and this is what happened when they want to give you an intellectual justification for the film.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
It could be that, yeah. It's no, I think it's. I did not set out writing to think it was like that, but I look at it and no, I did the look at the. I look at it. You know, I haven't seen the movie for a while, and I watch it and I go, oh my God, he's a Wall Street monster. I mean, it's the exact same psychology, or just like Wall Street run amok. That's definitely the same psychology as our guy.
Oh yeah. Huh. So there's this young woman in your film, and she is struggling to make her way from what it looks like on the trailer, and the trailer can be seen at princeofswine.com for our listeners out there. If you want to bring up another window on top of this and take a look at the trailer while you listen to our show, feel free to do that, princeofswine.com. And in this trailer, this young lady is trying to get, a leg up in the industry. and so here she is trying to make her way and assuages her boss's advance to do so.
She's actually not in the entertainment industry. She's a young lawyer, but she's in the middle of Los Angeles and just sort of, you know, trying to make sense of life, which maybe not the maybe not the holiest place to be if you're trying to get a good
yeah, this would be not only the sense of life but the dollars of life. Cha-ching. Okay, so that was
it's
bad.
A very ambitious place. There's a lot of raw ambition and things,
right?
That, you know, it actually ended up being that way, because I think that's what happens. I mean, when you know, a lot of things that are beneath the surface get blown to the surface. That's what happens in a good movie, in my opinion.
Right.
And that's kind of what's happened economically in this country. You get a lot of, you know, passions that are below the surface. They come to the surface, and you know, people think the world is coming to an end, but it probably isn't. But
yeah, hopefully not. Yeah, well said.
But
well
no,
said.
You get to see what. So she's being exposed to that. Just sort of, I don't know, raw human nature, just the passions that run beneath everything, and she's trying to make sense of it. And she's, you know, I mean, she's young. She's just wondering what's it all mean. She's at that crisis in her life and stuff, and just trying to figure out what to believe in and stuff.
And this character is played by an actress who recently graduated from Yale.
Yeah, she was straight out of Yale when she got the role. That was actually what was just perfect about her. She was, you know, very idealistic and just very pure herself. I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing in Hollywood?
But right. Yeah. Yeah, those are two hugely different marketplaces, aren't they?
Yes, it's right. Two different, hugely different mindsets, too. Yeah. I mean, Nell, my actress, would always, you know, describe Yale as, you know, she loved Yale. It was nurturing, and it was very intellectually awake. And those are just so not two words I would use to describe Hollywood.
Yeah. Help me out with this actress's name. She deserves a little airtime.
Yeah. Nell Rutledge is her name.
Nell Rutledge.
She is fascinating looking. Just having,
yes.
Because you came on our show last minute, and we appreciate that. But there, by we didn't get to see your DVD, and just in her picture alone, she's so expressive.
Oh, she's absolutely unique. I love Nell as an actress. And that shot, that very shot that's the cover shot of the movie, we worked so hard to get that shot. I think so much goes into that. I'm so glad you like that expression.
It's
because just to get that, which is just a few moments on screen, you're supposed to be able to see her whole lifetime and her whole past, where she's coming from.
Nice.
And, yeah, I think she's at a dark crisis in her life. I think that's very obvious from just looking in her eyes right there. That's very, very, and it's authentic, too. It's very, very hard to get there as an actress, and she really had to go through kind of dark psychological territory to get there. A person who's at a life crisis point in their life, who's, just at a very, very dark live-or-die place. And, that's really what the movie, I don't like saying what the movie's about. I prefer people to watch it.
Sure.
But at the deepest level, it's about the trial of her soul. I mean, there's supposed to be three trials going on in the movie. There's the actual trial, which is the comedy of the movie, and then we kind of put feminism on trial. But she's going through a trial for her soul, like a dark night of her soul.
Uh-huh.
And that to me, that's the most beautiful level of the movie. It's really, really a beautiful performance. And
nice.
She just absolutely went out on a limb and just I thought nailed it, especially for an extremely young actress, her first her first big hard role like that. It's just very brave and a very beautiful performance.
You opened this film as a play in New York and then met a producer who brought you to Los Angeles. Talk a little bit about how it started as a play and what you experienced as a producer and director. And I would assume you probably starred in the play as well. I have no idea. I'm guessing here.
Yeah.
And then once you got there, talk about your audition process for finding Nell.
It started as a play in New York. It's headed back to New York now. We will probably open in New York in the spring. We're talking with the Quad Cinemas right now.
Terrific.
And that's probably where we'll play in the spring. And it still has a New York sensibility, even though it's set in Los Angeles now. It still has that kind of, whenever New Yorkers come to Los Angeles, they have a certain, experience of it. They
sure.
have like, oh my God, this is just crass commercialism, and where's the intellectual life of this place and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it still has that kind of feel to it of someone being horrified by, ancient Rome or something like that. But
okay.
It's kind of like the Colosseum. It's like intellectuals coming to the Colosseum or something.
Right, right, right. When do they release the lions?
Basically like that.
Yeah.
So it's headed back. It was born in New York. Not a word of the play survived to make the screenplay. When they brought me out to Hollywood and I rewrote it.
Okay.
It just changed everything. And it used to be set against the, when I say it kind of prefigures the crash, it used to be set against the finance sector in New York.
Uh-huh.
And when I rewrote it in Los Angeles, I set it against the entertainment industry. And the entertainment industry is just, everybody in it knows it's just, business to the 10th power. It's the odds against success are, 10 times, 100 times higher. The ambition is just so much more.
You bet.
It's just so much more Darwinian than any other business in the country that dramatically that just amped up the movie greatly. And it really changed everything. I needed sort of passions to be blown to the surface and be out of control. And there's no place like the film business.
You're right about that. Right. So
they run up against the law eventually, which is exactly what happened on Wall Street. I went to the University of Chicago, and that's where this belief emanated from, that you could just let a market run free and everything would be all right. And that's just this is really the question of our time right now.
Yeah.
That is a wildly naive belief, and it's brought us to our knees. You've got to have some sort of plan. You've got to have some sort of legal structure. And as long as we don't realize that, this Well, I don't know if we'll even get up off our knees to have another crash, but if we do get up off our knees, we will have another crash.
I was appalled watching the crawl on CNN this morning here in the studio. You know, they have those little quick polls, and it was something about audience outrage or something, and not hearing the audio stream. I just watched this little banner go across, and the poll was, do we blame the U.S. or China for the financial difficulties? And the reply from America was, neither one. Blame it on the Canadians. And I'm thinking, oh, man, are we in deep trouble here. Oh, my goodness.
Like an episode of South Park or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done.
Help us, Matt and
blame
Trey.
Canada.
Help us.
Blame Canada.
That's great. Oy, we are in trouble. But anyway, back to Prince of Swine.
Back to the movies. Yeah.
Was that a one-act or a three-act play?
That was a three-act play. Uh-huh. It was a full-length play in New York. Yeah, it was, I mean, theater is, I love theater. Mm-hmm. It's a training ground, and it's just a place to take, just to learn, you know, writing and acting without any kind of business pressure or anything like that. It's like a church.
Right.
When I'm critical of Hollywood product, it's that they don't have strong writing, they don't have strong acting.
Especially they don't take
writing seriously. Right. You know, writing is worshipped in the theater, and mm-hmm. acting, I mean, there's a school of thought in acting. I think I heard Christian Bale say it. He goes, if you can give me a script and two people are just talking on stage and it holds my attention, I'll do that without all the rest of the bells and whistles. I'll do that script.
Right.
And you can do a lot more with a movie, obviously. I mean, you can create a whole world like
Certainly.
James Cameron, but if it doesn't work on that level, you know, it doesn't work. You've built something on a house of sand.
Right.
And I hugely insist on rehearsal in a film. Not everybody does, you know. I think it's just a hugely valuable process.
That's right.
It's a lot of times it's an afterthought in a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's basically what came out of New York. I think that's what one of the strengths of the movie is.
Were you able to hold on to the spine, I would assume, of the piece as you developed it into a screenplay? You said you didn't keep the same lines per se, but obviously I would assume the plot line and the spine that it surrounds remained, and certainly your three elements of inner struggle and outer struggle and personal struggle were maintained. When you had to rewrite that, how much of the artistic ownership were you able to keep?
The general shape of it, I mean, the general theme was all the same. Mm-hmm. Moving it to Hollywood just had the effect of amping it up, and it kind of achieved, I guess, critical velocity. You know, I thought the play was interesting. It held your attention. But, you know, there's a moment in the movie where you go for broke, the climax of the movie, everything pays off. And unless your movie's got a certain amount of steam, it's got to be like almost like a runaway train. It's not going to make a leap across that arc. You know, it's not going to have a big, you know, climax, the big explosion. And moving it to Hollywood got it up to speed like that. I mean, just the stakes are higher, the speed of everything is higher, the intensity of the emotion is higher.
Nice.
And that changed all the lines. The basic structure, it stayed the same. The basic themes stayed the same, but they came alive. I mean, I'm often critical of the movie business, but that the transition from stage to film was just a huge increase in power for the movie.
Nice. We are speaking with filmmaker Mark Toma, actor, writer, and director of the film Prince of Swine. PrinceofSwine.com. We'll be right back after these messages. He So maybe we'll ask Bob if we could get Julie on. That'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, either that or Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer.
I mean, he's done Star Trek. He's done some pretty eerie, creepy thrillers.
Yeah, he's kind of a rocking dude. So we'll do our best, listeners. Thank you for asking that question and chatting in today. We are speaking with Mark Toma, actor, writer, and director of Prince of Swine. And you can see the trailer at www.princeofswine.com. Before we went to break, we were getting a little bit of information about the challenge of going from stage to film. Let's continue that discussion with how you acquired your actors and the audition process that took place. You had mentioned earlier that you used some of the trades and that you also took advantage of Mandy.com and Craigslist.com for your crew. I would assume that was also partly the case for your casting.
We used breakdown services. We starting on, I think the other one is Casting Extra. There was a new company started up. I think they're very established now. Now Casting.
Oh yeah, sure.
It was I guess they were the new guys on the block, so they were offering to do everything for less than I believe. I don't know. I haven't. Who's controlling the market? I don't know.
I get a lot of leads for auditions through Now Casting myself. That's a very active and successful group of individuals that are doing a great job as an actor. When you file to be represented by them, it's a free service. Up to a certain point, of course, you can have your headshot and your resume and even your demo reel streaming on their site. And when producers like yourself are looking for talent, then you simply go to Now Casting and type in your breakdown of characters, and outspits this huge reply to that goes to actors. And as an actor, when I receive those notices, I can feed my interest right back to them and get hooked up for auditions. So it's a wonderful little way of getting more of you out there. Well, that's terrific.
Yeah,
so how did you find Nell?
Nell was the very last people, one of the very last. I did just an extensive search for my lead actress. I mean, I was just fanatical about finding the right person.
It's a little
and
bit important.
Everybody else. Yeah, kind of the whole movie is riding.
Yeah,
on it.
Just a bit.
And I didn't know what I would find when I was looking for it. But I mean, there was just everybody else was cast, and she just kind of wandered into the auditions at the last moment, and was just this. She just had the perfect quality about her. There was something just had to click immediately between me and the actress for that to work. I mean, just more writer to actress than director. I was just looking for the heroine that was in my movie. And
so did you read with her, or was that something that came to you later? I mean, were you at that audition for her first cold call?
Oh yeah, I was. Mm-hmm. I was at the auditions.
Nice.
The actors, we would give them sides. They'd get up there, and we would either have somebody in to read, or I would. They eventually read opposite all of the lead actress candidates.
Good.
But, she was just. She just had a really easy chemistry with her from the start. She just exuded intelligence and integrity, I guess, just on a personal level. She had this just kind of. Like, you could tell she was a very good person. Like, she was a person who was idealistic and cared about. That's the way she is in real life. Mm-hmm. And that has to be there in this actual character. This actual character is a character like that, but is just, you know, engaging just real darkness for the first time in their life and trying to reconcile that with what sort of person they are. She just had the first part, the lightness part in spades.
Right.
She experienced the darkness part making the movie.
Now, did she bring that to her audition? I would assume you would have pulled aside where there would have been that obstacle for her to overcome in the side that she read.
And it was there. But the actual, I mean, the difference between just an audition side and actually just the marathon of making a movie,
right?
And this character just has to cross an abyss. Like, they have to cross a dark night of the soul,
right.
And the actor playing that has to do that too. I mean, there is just no easy way to do that. And she was, you know, she was. It wound up. I mean, the movie's not at all autobiographical, but everybody goes through that kind of crisis
of
in their life,
right.
And I think I ended up, you know, I was kind of crossing the same psychological territory at about her age, so maybe
right.
I mean, that's mm-hmm. why I was drawn to her or something. But
nice.
I was just so pleased with her. Everything I asked her to do, which were hard things, she just did it very brave, and just even if she was in over her head, it just added to the character and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the character in the movie is in over her head too.
Now, you must have had quite a powerful DP as well as location manager, because one of the quotes from Ebony Brown of Ebony Circle Media said, "Shots of Hollywood Boulevard haven't looked this cool since Pretty Woman."
Nice.
Now, that's a nice little kudo to you. Talk a little bit about the selection of your DP and unit production manager.
My DP was Nick Salimbene, and the look of the movie comes. It wasn't any plan or anything. It wasn't any late. I mean, I knew what I wanted, but that's an organic. That's an organic result of shooting in a guerrilla war style. I mean, you get that guerrilla look to a movie of just being right down on the street. I mean, that comes from not planning.
Yeah.
You go out in the street and whatever happens.
Right.
And that's just. I mean, if we had to put together different elements to look like whatever's happening on a Saturday night in Hollywood, it would look, unless you had somebody who was incredibly gifted, it would look very contrived or very artificial. No, we're out on the street in Hollywood on a Saturday night. But, yeah.
So you post your sign saying you walked in this area and you are being captured on film. And
that's somebody who deserves a lot of effort. Like we would say... Actually, we did it the other way. We said, there's a person. That's the one I want. Point the camera there. And then, you send a production on and say, get a release.
That works.
Wow. Very good.
What kind of camera?
We've got some beautiful shots that I can't use because the person was like, I don't know.
Oh, that's a shame. What kind of camera did you use? Were you out there with a Red? Red camera?
No, the Red, this was just before the Red came out or had been tested. It was the precursor to that. It's the top-of-the-line Sony HD camera.
Very nice.
It's the 1200. I think it can do, I mean, it does everything the Red does. The Red is, I mean, you see the Red just by itself, and it's this tiny little camera, and you think, wow, I'm going to be able to do so much with this. It's like carrying a camcorder around. But by the time they put all the bells and whistles on it, it's just as big as the old one.
It's amazing, isn't it? Oh, you bet. Mark, I hate to say it, but our ending music is already playing.
Oh, my God, that went by too fast.
I'm just so glad that you were brought to us by TheIndieFest.com, Dr. Thomas Baker and his program. Thank you so much for bringing Mark Toma to us. We've had such a great time speaking with you today, Mark, and we wish you the very best with your film and its success. Where can our listeners view your film?
We should be opening in New York in the spring, probably at the Quad Cinemas. Depending on how we do there, we'll be coming to a city near you.
Excellent.
And hopefully it'll run the course of all the usual places you see an indie film.
You bet.
But New York is next.
Terrific. Well, award-winning Mark Toma with The Prince of Swine, sponsored by TheIndieFest.com. It's been nothing but a pleasure. Thank you so much, Mark. We'll see the rest of you, or listen to the rest of you, or be heard by the rest of you 1 week from today. 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, the Roaring Success Radio Hour with Paul Neil Rohr and Wild Bill Green and Tyson Behind the Glass. Till next week.